Hi, I'm Jared Potter, and we're talking about designing for Windows Phone 201. In this section, we've talked about the system, the composition of Windows Phone pages, and now lastly, we'll be talking about the controls available to you and the APIs. In this section, I've broken it down into controls, of course, and of course the APIs, and lastly, we'll finish up with actually putting a little bit of UI on the device with some prototyping with those controls and with those APIs. So, first thing I should talk about, which is probably the most simple thing and the thing that you're going to see throughout your apps, our apps, everyone's apps, is button, right? There's a couple different types of button. There is the standalone push buttons. There are toggle buttons provided to you, which are actually a different control. So if you're using them, toggle buttons actually have the state of selected or unselected. We have application bar icons, which we talked about when we talked about the application bar and sort of the shell level buttons. We also have dialog buttons that you'll see up here, as well as command buttons that allow you to edit the templates and put more content in them and sort of edit them that much more. Button how-tos is the button control should never include more than two words. This is a simple thing, but also remember when I was talking earlier today, we were talking about sort of localization and globalization. If your application is going to be localized and globalized and you're going to change those strings out to a different language, you always want to leave 40% buffer in there. So that's one rule, but the second rule is just try to keep your buttons to less than two words. You wouldn't want to have a whole bunch of text to make it difficult. Usually, you usually just want to use a verb like, okay, cancel. Always use the system fonts unless brand guidelines tell you to use another font. So by default, our systems and our buttons have been used and utilized with the default fonts. You can style that and control that as much as you want, but it's the default. Button control text should be concise and typically a verb. I kind of mentioned this, okay, cancel. And then the last thing, button control text may be dynamic. So you're allowed to make this dynamic, populate, edit, things like that. But the next thing that we're going to look a little bit at is checkboxes. Checkboxes are generally used and left out of anything but a settings screen for us on Windows Phone 8. You can use the checkbox control in groups to display multiple choices from which the user can select one or more. The checkbox control is similar to the radio button control in that each is used to indicate a selection that is made by the user. They differ in only one radio button in a group of buttons can be selected at a time, where checkboxes, you can do multi-select. Multi-select is built into a lot of the lists. Like an email, if you tap the far left-hand side of the screen, you'll be able to multi-select checkboxes and delete multiple emails at once. In a couple of different scenarios, like in the photo galleries, there's actually a multi-select icon down at the bottom of the screen that shows the checkboxes. These are two totally acceptable ways to show and hide checkboxes on lists that aren't in setting screens. So a couple of checkboxes how-to. Checkbox controls can be used to change the availability or state of other dependent UI elements in the same way. So you could say save password and then turn on and off a password box. Always use the system font unless brand guidelines specify you otherwise. We always kind of give that recommendation when it comes to controls that are built into the system. Next, we recommend that you limit text for a checkbox control to either one or two lines. So in buttons, we just say no more than two words. In checkboxes, you can actually have a line of text after it. Click that and it will also check this checkbox. But we recommend that you limit it to one or two lines. Otherwise, use a radio button or a list control. If there's going to be a ton of text, maybe checkbox isn't the right thing for you. If there are several choices to present, consider using a scroll viewer control, adding a stack panel. So be able to scroll through the content either vertically or horizontally, usually vertically. Try to avoid the use of indeterminate state. So indeterminate state means it is neither checked or unchecked. It has not been determined yet. A lot of times the user will think that that means that it is unchecked. So try to avoid using the indeterminate state on a checkbox. If this is the case, maybe you should be using a different control like radio button, but it seems to be one of the more confusing states and never tests well when you test it with real users and user research. Hyperlink button. The hyperlink button control looks and operates just like a conventional web hyperlink. It consists of specially formatted text or an image that can be tapped to open a web view somewhere else in your app or mobile Internet Explorer. It can actually fire you out into Internet Explorer. It similarly looks just like this, but a couple of things and how-tos to remember. Don't make hyperlink button controls longer than a word or two. Don't replace hyperlink button controls close to each other. Doing so will make it really difficult. Remember why we said the minimum hit targets? Well, the minimum hit targets actually get even smaller when you're talking about 15-pixel fonts or 15-point font sizes. So it actually goes smaller than what we recommend to be the smallest hit target. So be really careful that you don't shove a bunch of these hyperlink buttons up next to each other. Don't display a hyperlink button control that's disabled and can't be enabled. This is a really frustrating thing. The disabled state isn't great for hyperlink buttons, and there's no really use case for this on the web why you would have a link that just didn't work. So don't use hyperlink buttons with disabled states. Buttons can have disabled states. Try not to use it with hyperlink button. Use a disabled state for the hyperlink button control only if the state is temporary. I still, even in this case, don't recommend it. So, next, we're going to talk a little bit about the image control. This is leaning a little bit more towards technical implementation. Earlier, we talked about imagery, and just in the visuals section, we were talking about all up images and when and how to use these. One of the things to note, just really at a high level, the rules still apply to the imagery section that I was talking about earlier in the visuals section, how to use image. But avoid pixelated images, and you'll notice, like even in this picture, banding in the images, try to use some of that add noise to get rid of banding, and then always note and realize that your pictures are going to get banded down to 16-bit instead of 24-bit. The size of an image control should sometimes depend on the content of that image. So always sort of think about the relevant content that it's coming in, whether you're pulling in a Facebook feed full of images or different content. Always be really cognizant of what the final product will be. Ink Presenter. This is fun if you're going to make an application for drawing or painting or doing anything like that. Ink Presenter basically controls and enables users to draw strokes and other elements, which makes it ideal for enabling users to draw on visual items such as editing pictures or even highlighting text. This is a control that we give to you. We allow you to use it. A lot of the controls in the list that I'm going through right now, I'm not going to tell you exactly how to use it in your application. My goal is kind of give you the design principles and say how we do it in the design studio, say how we think about things, how we brainstorm about things. Then I talk to you about the visuals and the way we do things, and then I'm just going to give you a list of how these controls and how they work and what the default things is and a couple of how-tos, but ultimately the design decisions are going to be up to you. And so we want to just give you the right amount of data around all this to make educated decisions when you're designing a Windows Phone 8 application. Next, radio buttons. Radio buttons were mentioned before when we were talking about checkboxes, but the only major difference with a radio button, if you're familiar with this analogy on the web, is that only one in a group can be selected at a time. So if this is a group, only this one would be selected. You select here, the other one would unselect. So this is a couple of radio button how-tos. Intentionally draw the user's complete attention to an important set of options or choices. Reserve your sort of illumination effects and animations for the selected state. You don't really want to have them all be different colors. In the unselected state, radio button controls should appear unused or kind of just sitting there waiting to be selected. Make them appear in their own view when possible to avoid distracting the user from an important decision and to cut down on the clutter. Maybe have the text, they read the text, and then give them the very simple options. And a part of that is just carry out some short, succinct labels for each title. Don't have it say like blah, 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 this and this and this, if you select this one. Kind of describe that earlier and then say yes or no on your check or on your radio buttons. Use strong sans serif typefaces. Make labels at least 12 pixels in height. Make sure that the label is legible from all angles and from all sizes. This is the one control that I'm going to talk about that has no picture. It has no visuals. This is the scroll viewer. A scroll viewer basically has nothing until you begin to scroll it. Then you're going to see a scroll bar. But basically what it does, it contains an array of content that wouldn't otherwise fit in the intended area. The scroll viewer has no user interface of its own. It's a container that provides scrolling functionality for UI items, specifically around lists and things like that. You're going to use scroll viewers all the time in your designs. There's not a lot of visuals around it. When you start scrolling, you'll see a scroll bar. But anyway, I thought you should know about it. It's going to be a powerful tool in your toolbox. Next, a slider. I've mentioned these a couple of times. The slider control basically allows you to set values in a range from zero to top, and you can set the range. If there's clicking or points along these, you should always have a visual cue, little teeny lines. I don't know if you can see this on the screen, but there's little indicators of snapping points along this. Characters of the sliding control. Applications can either use a horizontal or a vertical slider. Only the extremes of a range are described in the labels of the slider. For example, low or high. They don't have a notch for every single one. And a couple of how-tos. Don't use a slider control as a progress indicator. You have your own progress indicator for that. This is for something totally different. This is for user input. Progress indicators to tell you what's going on with the device. This is for you to tell the device what should happen. Don't label every tick mark. Only the outside, high and low, should be labeled. Don't change the size of the thumb from the default size. We thought long and hard and did a lot of user research in Windows Phone Design Studio about what the sizes of those hit targets should be. You can edit them, but by rule of thumb, don't, unless you're going to make them slightly bigger. Don't make a slider control track anything but a straight line. Making it a curvy line is really difficult to do with the gestures built into it. The slider control has a large hit target region. To maintain good touch accessibility, one, don't put a lot of items right up next to it, and don't position it too closely to the edge, because remember when we were talking about hit targets? The slider control is one of the controls that we built in negative hit targets. The easiest way to hit it is to give it a little space on the sides, like you'll notice in that last slide, and the actual hit target actually comes out to the edge of the screen. If you bump the visuals to the edge of the screen, most of your hit target will actually not exist. So leave a little space on the sides. We recommend that with every control, though, on Windows Phone. Like any drag-enabled control, the slider control shouldn't be used in a control itself that supports dragging. A great example of this, don't put a slider control in a pivot or a panorama. Both of those pan left to right to look at different data or different contexts on the same data. If you have a slider control and actually hit those, it'll become very confusing. Next, progress bar. This is the thing that I said don't use a slider control for, because we got a control for you. The progress bar can be put anywhere. We have a control that allow it to be set anywhere on the stage. However, we actually have one built up into the system tray, and you can turn this on and off at any given point. The progress bar has two different visual states. There is the determinate state, which basically means we've determined how long and how much data we need for it to finish, and this is a solid fill line that fills all up. And then there is the indeterminate state, which is basically a bunch of little dots that animate across the screen saying something's happening, we're loading something, but we can't tell you the exact moment it's going to be done. This is the different visual states of connecting indeterminate and determinate. Next, list boxes. List boxes are common UI that you're going to see everywhere throughout Windows Phone. A list box control presents a fixed size scrolling selection of items. It has a built-in scroll viewer on it, the control that I mentioned earlier. Users can swipe vertically up and down. If you're not going to swipe up and down, I just recommend using a scroll viewer with some different content. That's not really what list boxes are meant for. And users tap the control to select an item. There's a selected item built into list boxes. List boxes are used throughout Windows Phone. It's very long, and some of them can get really long lists. So they've built virtualization into the list boxes. If you're going to have a super long list, you might want to use a list box. So a couple of list box how-tos. Use strong sans serif typefaces. Make list items and text at least 12 pixels in height, and make sure that the text is legible from all angles and sizes. That's very important for any UI element. And then reserve your illumination effects and animations and things for the selected item when it comes to your list box. Don't have all the items illuminated or different colors and things like that. Just really focus on the selected one. Another thing to note, don't have super complex layouts that have different heights and widths on the items inside of a list box. If they all have the same height, they will be much more performant. And this is just something I've learned from writing multiple Windows Phone applications. The next thing is a control that we provide for you, and it's everywhere in our UI. It's called the Long List Selector. I know. It's a very Microsoft title, Long List Selector, Ultimate version 5, right? But it allows you to quick jump in a long list that has categories. These can be alpha, A to Z. So you can use a long list selector control to control screen, conserve screen real estate when you want to preserve a long list of words, numbers, or visual elements from the user to expect that the user is expected to choose. So it, basically what a long list selector does is it has top title categories. So you have an alphabetical list, and then you have these things called group headers. And when a group header, if we go back to the last screen, hits the top of the screen, it stays there. It's a sticky group header, and the content slides underneath it until the next one hits and bumps it off. If you tap anywhere on these, on any of the headers, and there will always be one on the screen because the top one always stays there, you will fire open a list, and it will be of all the different options in there. Ultimately, this can scroll if you have more characters, but it's default for A to Z, so it should fit on the screen. And then if you click the letter M, you will jump directly down to the M. There's other header groups that look slightly different than the alphabetical one. So a couple of long how-tos. Use strong sans-serif typefaces once again, and then also reserve the focused state for when it's selected, not for just anything at random. Media element. So the media element is pretty straightforward. It actually doesn't have the controls built into it. You're going to have to build those on your own. Some other developers have built this, but it's basically the element that you'll be able to use for streaming video and watching video and doing all kinds of fun kind of stuff, even with your animations. Next, text. There's a lot of different ways to deal with text. Obviously, we have rich text box, password boxes, a default text box, and we have keyboards to talk about. So I'll dive right in and kind of tell you what your options are on all this. The first and the very basic one is text block. So text block basically is just any element that displays a fixed amount of text and is used to label controls. So it's basically anywhere in there, and anytime you want to show up some basic text that doesn't have functionality, you can't edit it, it's not a button, it's a text block. A text block control doesn't include actionable controls at all. The next is the text box, and text box is an editable control. Couple things to note about the text box is as you type, it'll animate and get taller if you don't define the width, the height. So you can create a height on it, or by default, it will fit one line of text, and as you type, it'll continually get bigger. You can tap it for focus, and automatically a keyboard will slide out, an on-screen keyboard. Tap and hold will allow you to put precise caret location. So if you want to make a selection, you can move your cursor directly onto it in between a certain amount of letters. Tapping on a word will select that whole word. So a couple of text box how-tos. Once the user has entered the text box in the control, consider how it will react visually if they tap that same text box control again. So this is important to remember, especially in like if you're creating a browser with an address bar. If you want to tap in there, you might want to just put the cursor on the end and add things if it's a normal text box. But if it's something like an address bar, you might want to select it. It might want to select all the text so you can type in a totally different domain. You have control over that as a user or as a developer and a designer, so think about that interaction. If you find yourself assigning special meanings to specific values in your text control, try the checkbox or radio controls, which allow the explicit user selections. Next is password box. Password box is like a very discrete text box. Basically what it does is as you type, it hides the characters so that someone can't see your password. It shows the last one that you've typed for just a second, and then it disappears into an obscure character so that you can't see it. This is very good for passwords. Use it for all cases of passwords, actually. Next, we're going to talk about the rich text box. Rich text box allows you to put some formatting text, add hyperlinks, adding inline images, and adding content programmatically. You can use this for like a word editor type situation. You can use it for all kinds of different things. It actually just has way more control over it. I'm not going to tell you how to use it, but if ever you need richly formatted text, this is the way to do it. A couple of the notes about text and keyboards. We have a lot of different types of keyboards, and one of the really exciting things that came out with Windows Phone 8 is the ability to protect your next word. So we have a candidate window up at the top that's scrollable left to right that allows you to select a word. As you type, it'll guess the next word. So you can say, I found this out the other day, I am going to go get some dinner now without ever typing anything but the I and then space, and then it begins to give you options of words. This is very exciting. It used to be that you had to type a couple of letters and then it would give you a really good guess of what the next word was. Now they're doing a much smarter algorithm in Windows Phone 8. It's a very exciting feature and a very dimmable feature to your friends and neighbors. Another thing that you can use is an auto-suggest control, and then finding kind of the options for them. That's going to take a little bit more programming for you. We'll move on to web browser. So the web browser control, make the text size the minimum requirements for Windows Phone, right? That 15 points that we talked about. One of the things that's really easy to do is throw a web browser control on there and not think about that. But that can really screw up your application in the UI in the application. Make sure the website loaded inside your web browser control is formatted correctly for a mobile device and uses colors, typography, and navigation that are consistent with the rest of your app. One of the things that you might be able to do is design and CSS your application or HTML page that's going to pop up into this control to look like it's natively part of the application. Another thing that's going to be difficult to get around, by default, when you gesture and interact on a web page, the way it bounces in that web browser control, it's going to do that embedded in the page. So just know that's going to be a part of it. Input fields should be sized appropriately. You don't want them too small, since users may not be able to expect that they can zoom or enter text because they may not know that it's a web browser. If a web browser control doesn't look like it's the rest of your app, consider alternative controls or ways to accomplish relevant tasks. Similar to this is our maps. Maps are made available, and you can use this API and program against these APIs in Windows Phone 8. The default mapping system is Nokia Maps, and that wraps up our conversation about controls. All right, so our next section, after we finished up our talk about controls, is of course APIs on the device. And so our APIs are different things that we've made available to you through either from the hardware or from other different global locations that you can sort of augment your existing applications and make them that much better. So first we're going to talk through some of the sensors that are going to be giving you data back. We have an accelerometer, AGPS, proximity sensor, gyroscope, camera, compass, and a light sensor. All these sensors are bringing data off the phone. So the very first one that everyone kind of knows this word now, since smartphones are in everybody's pocket, is the accelerometer. Windows phones are no exception to this rule. They have great accelerometers. It's basically an electromechanical device that measures acceleration left or right, how the phone is moving around, right? Developers creating applications need this sort of sensory feedback, and it's really great for games, right? Yanking around and playing games like marble type rolling games and things like that. We have a GPS sensor, and AGPS is basically assisted global positioning system that uses a couple different ways to determine your location. It determines the location of the phone and provides information to location services on behalf of the phone. This is also something that's really handy. You can use this in conjunction to your mapping and the maps that you've been working on or using in your application. It's just a simple thing to bring your mapping application to the next level. We also have a gyroscope sensor. The Windows Phone, since the beginning, has a gyroscope that allows you to get X, Y, and Z locations off of the data from the gyroscope sensor. Compass. The compass is basically the same as any compass that you'd use anywhere. It's nothing super complex, but the compass is used to determine navigation direction relative to the Earth's magnetic field. It'll point north. One of the things to note when you're designing an application is this can be a little bit jumpy. Depending on if you're indoors or next to a lot of electronic equipment, it might be jumping all over the place as a sensor reading. You might want to take that and streamline it and smooth it out just a little bit. We already do a little bit on our side, but your application should know that that data is coming in fast and furious. Light sensors. The light sensor is used to determine the intensity of light. It basically adjusts your screen to brightness or darkness. When you're, as a developer, you don't really have access to the light sensor and its behaviors. There's no UI elements associated with it, and you can't tell the sensor whether the room's lighter or darker. It does that automatically. You can't override it and control it. proximity sensor. The proximity sensor is also something that you can't override and control. It's just native and built in. It's really important for phone calls, and it basically says if the phone is within 15 millimeters of your face, it's going to turn off the screen, so it turns off the buttons and the hit targets and doesn't hang up on you automatically. This is a really important sensor. It's something that you're going to use. It's going to override your applications if it thinks it's close to your face, but it's basically something that you can't program against yourself. The camera. All Windows Phone cameras have a 5 megapixel or larger camera with autofocus and flash and a 4:3 aspect ratio image sensor. There are no direct UI elements associated with the camera. So you can program against the camera, and a couple camera how-tos. Be consistent as you can when you're creating, if you're creating a camera application. Try to make it mirror the scenario on the phone a little bit, because people are really used to using the hardware camera button. So gesture support, swipe left to preview. Try to support portrait and landscape orientations, because our camera does. One of the things about button behavior, the half press for hardware capture and touch to capture for focus. Touching the screen will let you focus in on that element. Flash icons and states for on, off, auto, front facing camera were relevant. And then we also have a focus bracket when you tap the screen to tell you what area on that screen is going to focus in. One picture per capture saved to the camera roll is a rule that we have. If you have more than one JPEG is created through the capture, the additional backing data should be saved on the app's local folder rather than just forced out. We also introduced a new API on Windows Phone that's pretty cool. It's called Lenses. And Lenses, from the camera scenario, there's a button now on the far left of the app bar that allows you to open up a new scenario, either download apps or jump directly into a camera app that has its own camera on it. So what you would do is click that button, you'd go out to a selector, select the application, and then take a picture or manipulate it in some way, and then, of course, possibly save it. There's some really fun ones that I've been playing around with that are out there that allow a lot of different manipulation to the images and the graphics on the phone. They're also rich media lenses. So rich media lenses are the exact same, but basically these can be used not in the camera scenario. They can be used after a picture is already taken to apply lenses to that individual picture. They're a deeper way of engaging with images that have already been captured. If your app stores additional data for editing or viewing of photos, you should consider implementing a rich media experience, especially if it has a way of editing existing images on the device. So a couple of rich media how-tos. Check to see if an image exists in the camera roll before opening it. There's some little wonky issues that I've heard about there, and gracefully handle the situation if it's missing. Rich media lenses should give users the ability to delete backing data from the device, and call save functionality save as copy, because it's going to save a copy. It's not going to save over the original picture, and the user should know that. Maps. Use a map control with your app to let users view app-specific or general geographic info without having to leave your app. In combination with the AGPS, this is a really powerful combination, and you can do a lot with it. A map control can also show aerial views, traffic, and local search in the list forms. Map controls can display the user's location, provide directions, find points of interest, and they can turn on and off traffic pointers. So, map how-to. Use ample screen space and ideally the entire screen space to display a map control. It's very difficult to interact on a map control if it's just a small portion of your screen. Audio. Of course, on our phone, we support streaming audio. We also support background audio. A lot of your applications might be dedicated to this. Look more into the developer docs on rules how to do this, but just make sure that when you're using it, that you're making the controls available that you can jump back in and pause that music at any given time. Speech. New APIs, Windows Phone 8, enable speech recognition, synthesis, and shell interaction so apps can be launched using speech commands as well as other commands being launched. We have Bluetooth now, which allow you even to talk to another device, which is very fantastic. There's other ways to do this. Of course, we've had the contacts picker. The contacts picker allows you to select people And we've got the media picker that allows you to jump in and select media, albums, videos, that kind of thing, content from your device. Some of the great APIs on Windows Phone 8 allow you to share. This is something that you should think about when you're designing your application. Quick ways to share out, including email, SMS, and social networks. You can pull up these APIs and quickly send out graphics, text, all kinds of things. I teach high school. Some of the students in my apps, actually in my class, made a class where you, or an application where you could send notes and messages, and it would basically encrypt and decrypt, and only someone who had the code could unencrypt them and decrypt them. They used these APIs and allowed them to share with SMS. They could email them. They could send them to their friends in lots of different ways, and their friends could decrypt them and encrypt them on another Windows phone. Windows Phone 8 enables NFC and wallet, tap to share, as well as the wallet option to carry around all of your data, your credit cards if you'd like, and make payments directly from your phone. This is all very cool. A couple of other miscellaneous APIs are the Wi-Fi. We've got calendar APIs, in-app purchases, and a whole advertisement platform. These can be found on developer.windowsphone.com. And this brings us to the end of the APIs section. And the last thing we're going to talk about today is some quick ways to get your ideas onto the phone, on Windows Phone 8. So there's a lot of different ways to do it and a lot of tools to do it, but a lot of times you're just trying to get your concepts across in a really quick and dirty way. One of the things that I do pretty regularly when I'm trying to come up with an idea or trying to get an idea across is I just use note cards. I've got a pen and I've got note cards, and this is a regular thing we've done on the design team, is just sketch out your ideas for applications, and we put them all out and we line them all up. The very first thing you can do is kind of get a high level of what's going on in your application, and starting from one screen, you can move to the next and press through and kind of get that scenario. Right after that, one of the things that works really well is starting to see these on device. The main thing that you can do just really quickly is actually take pictures of these screens on your phone, and then you will see them on your phone similar to how they will lay out on the device. You can put this in front of someone very quickly just by handing them the phone and then asking them to click through your application or press through, and then you can slide through and see what the individual screens are going to be like as you move from item to item. You can do a more complex version of this by importing these into Visual Studio and Blend. You can put opaque buttons over the top of them and allow navigation from screen to screen in that way. But using this quick and dirty way of prototyping, you're able to get your screen and idea from a card onto your phone in little or no time and into somebody else's hands so they can test it and give you feedback back on how that application works. Lastly, it improves usability that much more when you have an example, a visual example in front of them of what it will look like when they are playing with your application. But this also works for design files. Save out your images as a PNG and just email them to you, or put them on your device in any number of ways. And this will be a great and simple way for you to test out your application design with other people and get their feedback on it. This is just a quick segment, but a little note and an important one about prototyping on Windows Phone 8. Thank you.